Yeah, we're back on WPTF, the Weekend Gardener. Mike Raley here at 907, along with Rufus Edmonston and Johnny Coley, who is the extension agent for horticulture in Person and Granville County. And Gary Stevenson, who is chief meteorologist with Spectrum News One here in North Carolina. And we're Greg Gardner. We're so glad to have Gary with us. Grew up in Dunn. So we got to get back to James. We had put on hold. James, do you know Joe the Bouncer?
Pardon me?
Do you know Joe the Bouncer?
Oh, yes.
It's good. Your brother-in-law. Okay.
Yes. How did you know that?
Well, it's, you know, it's...
The
it's
CIA.
As a journalist, we have to find these things out. You know, we have sources.
Well, you might find this interesting also. I ran an antique shop. I was one of the pioneers in Cameron down in Moore County.
Oh, yeah.
That was wonderful. Yes, I took the old drugstore building and turned it into an antique
shop. Oh, I've been in there, James.
Yeah, me too.
Well, Rufus and his wife used to come in there and enjoy talking with me.
Absolutely. My gosh, hello. I have an old ashtray that lights up on the top and the bottom I got from you.
What's the reasoning for the lights, Rufus?
Well, it's just a decorative thing.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were having trouble smoking in the dark.
The bottom is a Japanese design, and two lighter. Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, I had a wonderful time. I was there for 10 years. Just a wonderful historic town.
It is.
And my business was quite well. But let me throw this at you. You'll get a kick out of this before I ask my question.
Yep.
I've got an asparagus fern. Would you like to take a guess at how old it is?
50.
39 years.
39.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
I bought it, and it's set out in front of my antique shop. That's where I bought it, and it's in its third pot now.
Wow. Yep. Yeah. Yep. You knew to change pots.
Yes, it's lit it already. But let me throw this at you, my last question. I've got the house I'm in is a beautiful bungalow, and it's got a veranda across the front that's about 35 feet across. And I put plants out there every summer, and it looks quite beautiful. Well, I had petunias and verbena out there. Well, something, after about a month of being there, and this has happened every year, something decides that it likes the blooms and comes and eats all the blooms and leaves the stems. I have sprayed. I have done everything. I've seen green caterpillars. I've seen grasshoppers and other things, but they don't bother the blooms. Well, I took one of the pots to the local agriculture extension agent to see if they could figure out what was wrong. He could not. He took pictures, sent it to Raleigh, and was waiting for an answer, and this was last year. I still have not heard a thing. Now, the interesting thing is I also have impatiens out there. These are the tall variety, and they are just as healthy as they can be. Whatever eats the flowers on the other leaves the impatiens alone.
Now that's one of the things of impatiens. Very little bother them, especially the sun patients.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah. As far as
what do you think might be getting hold of the others?
You said petunia. Is it a petunia, the bigger bloom petunia, or is it like a Calibrachoa, which is a smaller bloom?
It's I don't know. It's a cascading type.
It is. Okay. Okay. Yeah, there is a caterpillar that will get on those I've seen that will eat them. And there's, I will tell you a story I had in another lifetime around a nursery, and we had Calibrachoas that they would just stop blooming, and I never could figure out what. I would spray them with any insecticide. I could spray them with bifenthrin, Safer Soap. I mean, any number of insecticides, and they would come back. And they would last for a while, and then they'd stop again. So there was an insect on there. I never could find it. Same thing. I sent them off to state. They never could find anything on them. So I don't really have an answer. But if you did spray them, and it does, you know, you can just use an insecticidal soap or a neem oil or anything. It seems like that did help. But
none of that helped mine. All I can say is, I am thrilled to death with the impatiens. They are mixed colors. They look beautiful. People even slow down, and they hold up traffic looking at it because it's that attractive. The house is right on the corner of an intersection, and it's a big house right up on the road, and the flowers just look beautiful out there. But then I've been holding this off about 45 minutes, but this has been well worth it. But I want to tell you thank you for your help, and what a delight to talk to Rufus.
Well, we appreciate you calling, and I, you know, don't mess with those hydrangea. Just see if you have overwatered it.
James, I would cut. I had one that acted that way. I cut it totally to the ground because, and each year the new greenery would come up, and mine grew out of it. And quit watering it so much, and you'll be okay.
Okay, thank you so much, and thank y'all for such a great program.
Well, thank you, James. Thank you. We appreciate that a great deal.
Bye-bye. Okay, take care of Joe the Bouncer.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, y'all have a good day.
You too.
Oh, Joe, he's a big guy. I'm telling you, I don't want to mess with him.
You know, my thought was, if we want to go high tech, we could put a security camera on those flowers and see what's
That's true. That's true, James. Go to the store and get you a camera.
Yeah.
And put it out there.
Because I was going to ask, too, if it was if the verbena and the petunias were being eaten, because that'd be unusual for something eating both of those.
And we've ruled out rabbits, right? I mean, rabbits eat the stems, too? Or will they just eat the flowers?
Just eat the flowers. I know deer just—they'll just eat the flower because they don't really like the foliage on the petunia because it's sort of gummy.
Well, could that be his problem?
Well, it sounds like it's up on a veranda. It's like it's up on a.
Ann Clapp used to say, "If they're hungry, they're hungry."
They will. Yeah.
Don't say they won't eat.
He would probably
anything.
See some ragged.
Okay.
Gnawing,
yeah.
They wouldn't. Just
Gary was talking to us out in the parking lot about the black light.
Oh, the flashlight. Hornworm. Yeah.
Yeah. He go ahead and tell us.
Well, you know, the internet is full of so much non-useful information. I stumbled across a video about how to detect hornworms in your tomato plants. And we all know if you've grown tomato plants, hornworms have perfect camouflage. You can't see the little boogers. Yeah. Well, they took a black light flashlight, go out at night and shine it on your tomato plants. And what happens is the hornworm kind of glows a little bit. Not really glows, but looks the black light. It's like when you're on a ride at Disney World and, you know, your shirt glows. Yeah. It's the same principle.
Yeah.
I bought me a flashlight, which I think is like $5-6. Went out there. Within 30 seconds, found a hornworm on my tomato plants.
Wow.
Within 3 minutes, found two more. And I have not had a single problem with hornworms this year.
Maybe James needs to go to the store and get him a black light
flashlight and see what's
and have a little clandestine walk out into the darkness some night and see what's out there.
That sounds like a plan. Yeah.
Well, he loves impatience so much. Just plant the verbenas and the petunias.
Well,
impatiens, by the way, are just such a wonderful plant. They bloom almost in all seasons except winter.
Tom Campbell is with us,
Hall
of Fame broadcaster. And Brother Tom, I'm sorry you weren't up here to try these Rufus tomatoes. They were pretty delicious that Craig Lahulier.
Yeah, you keep threatening to let me try them, but for some reason Rufus keeps them away from.
Well, he just got them from Craig LaHooley, who grew these and packaged them and sent them by mail.
Wow.
Have you ever heard of that, Tom?
Now, can we ask real fast, Rufus, how were they packaged to be able to mail them?
They were
that?
Packaged very carefully.
Very well.
Hermetically sealed.
For these three tomatoes, there was a box about 2x2.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And there was enough newspaper in there to start a fire. But they were delicious, Tom.
Yeah.
We tested here.
Sure did.
Well, good. Good.
So I'm sorry Craig bowed out early this morning, and he was supposed to be on with us. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. Not a problem. This seems to be the day where everybody's presenting you with all kinds of interesting maladies, and
that's right.
Y'all don't have any solutions for them today.
Well,
thank you, Doc.
We're hemming and hawing. Well,
but it's been fun listening.
Well, do you have a solution for any of these problems?
Not at all.
Okay.
But I have a problem.
Okay. Well,
I sent you an email.
Okay, let me check here.
My tomato plants have. First of all, the stalks have some little black spots on them. And then the fruit itself has some black spots on it. I sent you a picture of both of them.
Well, I don't see it. I see something. Oh, then now I do. Now, well, no. Let me see here. I see something from Craig. I see something from Herb that was just sent over. I don't see anything from you yet, Tom.
I sent it to you and to Craig.
Okay.
But anyway, the stalk, like I say, has got black spots up and down or patches up and down. This weather has been horrible for tomatoes.
But has it produced fruit, Tom?
Well,
Tom?
No. Kind of left us hanging there.
Cliffhanger.
Tom?
Yeah.
Okay, we got you back now.
I'm trying to keep up with the conversation. Oh,
okay,
guys.
Well, you were right mid-sentence. We were a little worried. So, I mean, I didn't know if you were that downtrodden about your tomatoes that you were a little broken up.
Well, I am a little downtrodden about it. I'm thinking about seeing a shrink.
Oh, well, you've come to the right place.
or at least an ag agent, one way or the other.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to get some relief here.
That's right.
So far as it goes, though, this weather has just been horrible. And, you know, with a consecutive 90-degree days, and then I thought I was going to have to build an ark last week.
Right.
There was so much rain, and I'm just not getting a lot of fruit production right now. But this one particular plant seems to have this problem with little black looking splotches or places on the stalk, and then the fruit itself has some.
Well, hold on a second, Tom. We're going to take a break and we'll let the tomato people ponder this, and we'll be right back here on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. It's 9:19. Yeah, we're talking about figs. Tom, I still haven't gotten that. Hey, Tom. Hello, Tom. Do we have Tom back?
Yeah.
Okay. I still haven't gotten your email. I got your text, but can you text me the picture?
I'm not well enough versed in technology to be able to talk to you and at the same time text.
Well, we'll just take your word for it. So you've got black spots
on leaves.
On the leaves?
And the stems? Stems leaves, and tomato?
Do you have any fruit?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to see if I could get this in to you.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. So, any ideas?
Well, two diseases come to mind: Septoria leaf spot, and I don't usually see that on the tomato. I don't think, and then bacterial
wilt,
the bacterial spot that gets on the leaves, and it also
wilt on the fruit. This isn't on the leaves. This is just on the stalk.
On the stalk and on the fruit itself.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would. I'd probably go toward bacterial leaf spot. I had a specialist one time tell me that trying to ID or diagnose diseases can make a monkey out of you without some pathology reports or something. But I was leaning toward fungus to begin with, but if it's bacteria, we're looking at a total different control measure, and if it spots on the fruit itself, it very well could be the bacterial spot, Xanthomothus perforans.
Rufus, do you
how about
have
I
any?
Do this? How yeah. about I just hang up with you, and Mike, let me see if I can resend this picture, and then I'll just listen and see if you all come up with, tell me something idea of it.
Have you sprayed any type of fungicides or anything?
Do Greg Adams, oh, Gerald Adams, yeah. Gerald Adams just texted me and said, sounds like bacterial speck or bacterial spot need yeah. to spray with copper fungicide
yeah.
and mancozeb fungicide.
Yeah, yeah, if it's bacterial, that's what it, yeah, you need.
And that's our other tomato guru, so.
Yeah, well, Gerald should know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to spray, but if you...
And unfortunately, bacteria is hard to get. Once you get it, it's hard to get it back under control. It's a more of a preventative, and most of our fungicides and bacterial control are proactive rather than once you get it, it's hard
to... At this point in the season, does that make any sense? I mean, is the best thing for me to do just pull up the plant?
Yeah, either that or, well, if it's on the stem, you can't do that. Sanitation, yeah, that probably would be because it can overwinter, and if you get rid of it, that way it won't be there sitting there waiting for next year. So,
Tom, you're talking about your garden at the river or in Raleigh?
In Raleigh.
Yeah. Now, by the way, how are your ginger lilies doing?
They are multiplying like bunny rabbits.
But aren't they blooming beautifully?
Rufus brought
some in. They haven't bloomed yet.
Oh, okay. Well, they should be blooming
now. Back in that back part of the garden, they don't get enough sun, so they bloom late.
Yeah. Rufus has a plethora of ginger lily varieties out there. You had some that were kind of orangey.
Salmon
pink.
Orange.
Yeah, that were blooming weeks ago.
Yes.
And you've got some white ones. You got
these are beautiful white, and they smell
like honeysuckle.
Yeah,
to me.
And they do spread. They do spread, don't they, Tom?
Yeah.
They do spread.
They look like corn stalks.
Yeah. Well, the project of the day, by the way, is putting up pears.
Oh my goodness! Y'all are working hard.
One of our neighbors down at the river had an old pear tree, and we had a storm down there. I think I called you last week from down there. It had a storm.
Yeah.
And it split off a big part of the tree, and there were pears all over everywhere. They weren't ripe, but anyway, she said, come get as many as you want. So I got one of those plastic laundry baskets full of them, and yesterday we peeled them and pared them and getting ready to make some pear preserves today.
Man, that sounds good. Tom, we got to go, buddy. You can hang on if you want to, but...
That's all right. I'm going to send you the picture, and I'll listen.
All right. All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
Y'all do good.
You all do right, good. Time. Bye-bye. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. Our We're back on WPTF. Your preliminary, we finally got the photos that Tom on Tom's tomatoes, and your preliminary.
Yeah, it looks like an insect bit diagnosis. That is some kind of insect.
Like a stink bug, you said?
Stink bug or something.
Yeah, that I sent the photos to Gerald. I don't know what he's. I'm sure he's busy this morning. Maybe he'll see those and get back to us on that. Do you grow tomatoes?
Oh, absolutely.
Gary?
That's the main reason I garden is tomatoes.
Yeah, most people they don't have
another
anything
fanatic.
Yeah, I mean, like I got big boys this year and cherry tomatoes, and you know I've heard a lot of people talking about how it's not been a really good season for tomatoes, but my tomatoes have done better this year than they have the previous 3 years.
Oh yes, okay.
Cherry tomatoes do usually do pretty well. They're one of the ones that don't succumb to a lot of the diseases that the other ones do. I heard Gerald say one time about tomatoes that the best way to have a good tomato crop is grow several varieties, and one of the varieties are going to do okay. But this has been, you know, and I think, you know, the tomatoes is one of the toughest vegetables to grow, really, because it gets so many different diseases. There's just so many diseases that it can get, from root diseases to foliar diseases, I mean, bacteria and fungus both.
Right.
Well, I tried Roma tomatoes for the first time this year, and just one plant, and got about a dozen off of it.
Yeah,
and
the smaller ones seem to be more resistant.
Were you in the ground or in pots?
Actually, I've got a raised bed.
Okay.
I did one of those things where you get the concrete end piece where you could put the 2x6s in.
Yeah.
And I built it up so I could put good stuff in it for it to grow.
Yeah.
And I've got two beds like that, one for the tomatoes and some peppers. Now, my peppers haven't done really well this year for some reason, which is really weird because normally bell peppers, they're
peppers usually do
well. What do you mean they didn't do well?
I've got three pepper plants and I ended up with two bell peppers.
Hmm.
I'd get the blooms, but you know nothing really materialized out of it. So
is that lack of pollination, or?
Well, if it bloomed, that would be a pollination issue. But that's odd. You know, you're getting tomatoes. Of course, tomatoes can be pollinated by wind. Peppers are going to probably. Not that they can't be pollinated by wind, but they do need some pollinators to visit them.
Ann Clapp used to tell us to take a Q-tip and go from flower to flower to flower to flower.
Well, the greenhouse grower, you know, the greenhouse tomato growers, they have to do some kind of pollinating because they don't have the pollinators. Some of them will get bees. They'll buy bumblebees in packages and release them into the greenhouses. But some of them will just use electric toothbrush, and just go to the bloom and just, you know, it'll shake the bloom and it'll make the pollen go everywhere. I actually had one guy tell, there was a, I forget now what this guy did, but he went to a lot of greenhouses, and there was a greenhouse grower. He actually attached jackhammers to his structure of his greenhouse and shook the whole greenhouse, and the vines were attached to it.
It
worked for him.
It's like an earthquake.
I would be a little afraid to do that, but it just shook the whole structure, and pollen went everywhere.
Well, Mike, you were talking about the whole Q-tip thing. I mean, again, one of those times where you actually find useful information on the internet. That's what I did. I saw that.
Okay.
And like with my zucchinis and my squash, because a lot of times that's what the problem is. They don't get pollinated, so they don't mature. Yeah. Yeah. And I'd get a Q-tip out there every other day, and I would get in there with the male plant. And
your neighbor's wondering, what is he doing?
Exactly. Actually, my wife was like, what are you doing with a Q-tip in the plants? I'm like, in vitro fertilization.
Exactly.
But
it works. And I'll say this, as much of a pain as carpenter bees are, they were great pollinators on my cucumber plants this year and squash. They were all over those plants.
That's great. Out pretty early this year. Let's go to Dave. Dave, good morning. You're on WPTF, and we'll go to Steve after Dave.
How you guys doing?
Hey, great, Dave. Thank you so much for waiting.
Yeah, Dave, had to go off this. Dave, you know what I called you about? At one time, you had a solution for those of us who have hummingbird feeders and the ants devour it and get over and mess things up. What was that?
So that is true. So some of these hummingbird feeders that you can get have actually built-in ant traps or like little dishes or moats that you keep filled with water, and that's part of the top. If you have a hummingbird feeder that you actually like, there are some that have two hooks on it that have a little cup of water that you would fill, and you would put that between where you're attaching it and your existing hummingbird feeder. we've been going back and forth through a whole bunch of different hummingbird issues this year and trying different feeders. One of the things that we had a problem with, Rufus, you talked about your ant problems. We wound up having some very serious bee problems with it, so much so that the bees were all over these new hummingbird feeders that the hummingbirds couldn't get anywhere near the thing. And it turned out a couple of things. One was a poor design in that the where the little fake flowers on the things were too low to the nectar source inside there so the bees could actually get at it, and that they all got attracted to that. We wound up having to get rid of those and going back to some that were a little bit steeper, I'll say, where the hummingbird with their beak and their long tongues could actually get into the nectar, but the bees had no way of getting in there. So that was the other thing that we learned on this was, and I had appreciated this, some of these hummingbird feeders are, they're kind of red and they've got yellow flowers. Well, the yellow, the bees are attracted to the yellow, so you have to find the best way to, help deter the bees from coming in there is, either coloring those flowers red or getting some that don't have any yellow on them in the first place.
I noticed that my hummingbird feeder is red and yellow.
Yeah, the yellow is a problem if you have a bee issue, if it's not really designed right.
Because that's been my problem this year. Mine's got the ant moat. Which works.
It's, okay, well, I don't.
Yeah, you got mine. Actually, the top that screws on, that is the ant moat, and it will keep them away. Now, the problem you have to do is keep it refilled because it will evaporate. There's not a lot of water in most of these, and the birds will actually stop by and take a drink of water. But my biggest problem this year has been yellow jackets. They have been all over. So do yellow jackets, are they attracted by the yellow as well?
Yeah, they're attracted by the yellow. And again, it's that the design where if it's too close, if the top of where the hummingbird would put their beak in is too close to the nectar, they'll get into those. So you need to kind of find one that's got a little bit more of a raised top to the thing, more domed. Or is designed so that the nectar sits much lower than where the top of the feeder is.
Yeah, well, Dave, where do you get your feeder that works?
She got it on Amazon, I think.
All right. Hey, Dave, hold on a second. We'll be right back just so we can get the information from you. All right.
Yeah, sure thing.
All right, 9:41. We'll also talk to Steve coming up here on WPTF. You're listening to The Weekend Gardener. It's 9:41. All right, we're back. We're looking at hummingbird feeders and trying to show this to Rufus. I don't know. Are you going to order the ant guard?
I'm going to follow Dave's advice, and if he can send me a picture of what kind to buy, Gary and I looked at it. And
this still has the yellow flower things that where the receptacles are still yellow flowers. Yeah, you say that's not good.
It's not great, but there's two designs that we wound up going with, and I mentioned that we wound up getting ours through Amazon because it was a trial and error. We were able to return them when we found the ones that didn't work well.
Oh, okay.
There's one of the ones you might be looking at is kind of different. Instead of being a kind of a taller tube type of thing, it's more of a flat disc, and it's got like a clear bottom on it. So it's kind of neat. At the right angle, you can actually see their little beaks and tongues going in and licking the stuff up.
Huh.
But Rufus, I'll send you a picture of that.
Yeah, I'll do that.
I did have a tomato question for you, as long as I'm on the line.
All right.
I'm actually calling you from the Garden State right now, so it makes sense that...
You're in Jersey?
Yeah.
What exit did you just pass by?
I am coming up to exit 6 on the turnpike right now.
All right, what's your question?
My question is, so I got 3 tomato plants from Gerald, and they're all growing great, all nice and bushy, but they're getting kind of tall. how much should I haircut the top to have them focus more on fruit production than your growing greenery?
If it grows out of your cage, cut it down to the top of the cage.
Yes. I think that's what Gerald said last week. Y'all had that discussion.
If they've got blossoms on it, it hurts your feelings, but go ahead and do it.
Okay. So even if it's got blossoms on the top, knock it. And so when are you assuming I have a cage that's 5 feet tall, or what are we talking about?
Well, I'm talking about a cage at least 5 feet tall.
Yeah. Rufus has some real tall ones.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of sticks that I'm using instead of a cage, but yeah. One side note. You've met my mother before. My mother doesn't use a Q-tip for her pollinating efforts. She just uses her finger and goes around and tickles all the flowers.
Yeah. So, that works.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's all I got for you guys.
Thank you, Dave. have a safe trip there in Jersey.
Be careful in the Garden State.
Yeah.
I got it. Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
See you next week at the farmer's market.
Yeah. So, we will be at the State Farmer's Market next week. Steve is in Garner, our daylily expert. I saw some pretty daylilies yesterday driving to Pittsburgh. Steve, how are you today, my friend?
Yeah, I'm out.
Lined up. Hey, Steve. Steve, I know you've been. Who's with you there, Steve?
I don't know
if
they're talking to me if I'm here.
No, we're talking to Steve. You need to turn your radio off or turn it down. Steve? Hello, Steve. Earth, we'll put Steve back on hold, and we'll go to Gene and then come back to Steve. Gene, good morning. You're on WPTF.
Good morning. Big fan of you guys, particularly Nelsa.
I got a little text from Nelsa this morning. We love. She's going to be on the show next week, out at the farmer's market.
Well, I may be there, or I may be in Blowing Rock or at Ashworth Clothing. You can never tell.
Sounds like a great combination.
Right, it certainly does.
We love all of those. All of that. Quite a combination, yeah. So.
I am calling in today because I am building a primary residence in Blowing Rock. The altitude of the house is going to be at 3,500 feet, and I have got some lovely boxwoods that my parents planted at the home place in Fuquay. They must be 45 years old.
Yeah. Are these English boxwoods or American?
They're English.
Okay.
Slow growing. So even after all that time, they are probably 4 feet wide, 4 feet tall. I cut them back in the spring to not full round, but just took some limbs out so some growth could get inside, anticipating relocating them. I talked to the man at the farmer's market who's the boxwood specialist, but I'm calling in because I just wanted to get a refresher on tips for relocating and any, maybe if you know anybody who has the equipment to dig them up.
How big are they, Gene? You sound to me like they're 7 or 8 feet tall.
She said 4x4.
No, they aren't. They're only like 4 feet and 4 feet wide.
Yeah, I wonder how big the root system is, Johnny.
Well, how long have they been in the ground, did you say?
Probably 45 years. My mother rooted them.
That's quite a root system.
Yeah, that is. I mean, you could do some. Do you want to move them this fall? Is that the time frame?
I was thinking September, October at the latest. You know, they have sentimental value.
They
will acclimate to the mountains because we've got a lot of boxwoods up there. I'm from Boone, as you know.
I've always been told to dig the holes first for the new location.
Yeah, that would be good. You could do some root pruning, but it's still a bit late for that at this point. Doing root pruning, that would need to be done well ahead of time so the roots can grow back.
Which means taking a shovel and
just go around the canopy, about where the canopy stops, and maybe a little outside the canopy and just go around it. But I, at this point, you don't really have time to do the root pruning and those roots to grow back. So you're not
going to you're trying to stimulate the roots to grow.
The roots to grow out, and you're not you're severing them from the roots that are, you know, further away from that, but yet getting them to grow so you'll have a better root system when you move them. But like I said, you know, in a couple of months is not going to be enough time probably to do much of that. So what you did in the spring, you know, cutting them back to get rid of some of the foliage, you know, you wouldn't want to do that when you get ready to move them, because September, October, you don't want to encourage new growth, and that's whenever you prune a boxwood or most any woody one that's growing, you're going to encourage new growth. So you don't want to do that that late in the year.
I did fertilize them real well in, I think, March or April, and they are just the richest green.
Yeah, that fertilizer will make them green.
Yeah.
You might want to check with Logan's to see. I don't know if they offer services
for transplanting.
But they might know someone there. I would normally tell you to check with Nelsa, but Nelsa's retired and all over the place, and you know she's not easy to contact. So I would check with Logan's to see if they know someone who can move them for you, that would be quite an operation. They'd have to truck them.
Yeah,
I mean, that's going to be a huge root ball.
But if they mean that much to her, though, I would get that professionally done, Gene.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's a huge root ball to be moving. It's going to be very heavy when you get it done.
Okay, that's helpful. And the equipment, you know, we're not spring chickens anymore.
Yes, ma'am. You'd want somebody else to do that anyway.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, that's great.
Well, let us know how it turns out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you moved with that to Watauga.
Yeah. What a beautiful area.
We'll be next to Julian Price in a little.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I love that place.
What a nice area.
Wow, that is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Call us from there occasionally if you will, Jim.
Yeah, the Cone Mansion is one of my favorite places.
Mm-hmm.
What is Rufus?
The Cone Mansion.
Yeah, that's right. This is Rufus.
Oh, yeah, just down the road in Westlow, and yeah.
That's a nice company. Nice neighbors.
Absolutely.
Right.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you so much.
Yes,
really,
ma'am.
Appreciate it.
Bye bye. All right, let's go back and see if Steve's with us. Steve.
Yeah, I never left.
Okay, we just couldn't hear you. We heard somebody talking in the background.
It wasn't me.
Okay, well, then we got Haints around here, as Rufus would say.
Can you hear me now?
We got you.
Yeah.
So are you out in the yard? Are you working on daylilies, or what are you doing?
No, I'm trying to control some crabgrass right now. But one of the things you guys are talking about, pollinators, one of the best things I got in my yard to attract, there's two things. A rose of Sharon, that thing is covered in, when it's covered in bloom, it's covered in bees. And they're usually honeybees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, that's my favorite tree, Steve.
Yeah, and it's a very good pollinator attractor. And square stem. Verbena.
Mm-hmm.
Verbena on a stick.
Yep.
I went out there the other day. We've got several that grow in our garden, and there must have been 15 butterflies out there just flittering around.
Nice.
So those two things do a really good job of attracting pollinators.
Well, another one, too, that I often talk about is the Mexican sunflower. It starts blooming about now.
Well, it's kind of a bluey purple.
Yep.
Daylilies will attract two, but they don't bloom as long as season as the verbena does.
How many, what was the peak this year for your daylilies? How many did you have blooming at the same time?
How many was the peak here? 375.
375 blooms at the same time. That's
kind
of nice.
We had blooms on plants that we have never had blooms on before because the deer didn't get us.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
We were really lucky in the fact that we had very little deer damage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now our violet. I went out there the other day, and it looked like something had been grazing on my violet. And is that a rabbit or a deer?
Yes.
That's very scientific, Johnny.
Leaves off the violet. That's I don't care that they can have all that they want, but it's just amazing to go out there, and it's just like they were grazing across the top, just eating the leaves.
Well, you may have answered your question then. It may be deer.
If yes, it's to both of them.
Well, grazing is a good word.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Steve, how's that blue daylily coming along?
You can come to the meeting tomorrow and find out.
It'll never happen, right, Steve?
Well, it would take a genetic miracle.
Yeah.
Well,
we always love hearing from you, my friend.
Well, I got one thing that I need to get out real quick. 2 o'clock tomorrow at the JCR Ralston Arboretum, we're starting up our meetings again.
Fantastic.
Ray and Wanda Quinn are the speakers. They're one of our hybridizers.
Okay.
2 o'clock.
Anybody's welcome to come. 2 o'clock at the JC Ralston Arboretum.
All right. We got to hit a break, guys. My friend. Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up.